It's officially DC festival season, and we're super excited about this one coming up on May 18th. Africa on the Avenue is a celebration of the vibrant African immigrant community along Georgia Avenue Northwest. There's going to be interactive art installations, fashion shows, music, food, and local business stands. This one-day festival, organized by District Bridges' Lower Georgia Avenue Main Street program, truly has something for everyone. So I'll see you there on May 18th. Go to districtbridges.org to learn more. Today on CityCast DC, DCPS is facing major cuts, a DC coffee staple unionizes, and Real Housewives of DC is finally released on streaming. If these are the kinds of news and culture conversations that you want to hear more about in DC, be sure to become a member of CityCast DC today at membership.citycast.fm. You'll get exclusive perks like ad-free listening, event invites, and members-only guides. But to get into today's news and culture updates, I'm joined by CityCast DC producer Ash Durbin and Washington City Paper's Kat Spisato. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Bridget Todd, and here's what DC is talking about. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Bridget.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, Ash, what is going on with these DCPS cuts?
Yeah, so I kind of had to put my policy wonk hat on for a little bit here. But essentially, in the midst of Bowser's new budget, DCPS is facing cutting 200 positions from schools. So this is teachers, mental health advisors, janitors, everyone pretty much is on the chopping block. This is across DCPS. There'll be 200 fewer teachers next year, which is only 2% of the staff. But I think schools are already struggling, and this could be, you know, this is rightfully kind of a contentious cut because it's schools and schools are struggling. And, you know, post-COVID, everything's happening. They're struggling to get back on their feet, get kids in school. So this has been pretty contentious this last week.
I know that DCPS has been having a big problem post-COVID with kids actually showing up to school. Are the kinds of positions they're going to be cutting folks who would kind of be supporting that? Like, is that going to get worse because of these cuts?
Yeah. I mean, so not to plug myself, but I have a piece for Local Civics on our website about absenteeism. So last year, the 2022-23 school year, 43% of DCPS students were chronically absent, which means they partially or fully missed 10% of all school days. And this number like jumped a lot after COVID, remote learning, kind of like the whole mix up of COVID and like shifting to that really affected a lot of kids. And some of them just, you know, haven't been able to get back on track. People criticizing this have said we need more teachers, not less teachers, to, you know, when there's less teachers, school sizes, class sizes are way bigger. Teachers are overwhelmed. It's, you know, way harder to engage students to, you know, if teachers are overwhelmed, maybe their lesson plans are a little bit different. And it's harder to just like keep kids engaged. Also, when they're cutting positions like behavior health or like counselors or stuff like that, that's a positions that really make sure kids are on track, make sure kids are okay at home, okay at school. So these cuts, it doesn't seem like it would help the absenteeism problem that DC's having.
And is there a particular ward or a particular part of DC that is going to be most impacted by these cuts?
Yeah. So I'm going off this Washington Post article, and this one says that Ward 8, which is, you know, has some of DC's most under-resourced schools already, could lose the most staff, which they could lose up to 99 roles, which is almost half of the 200 roles cut in the first place. So that's not great. Again, like if you're losing 99 roles, those are all 99 of those are like teachers that could be engaging kids, making sure they're in school, making sure they're staying on course to graduate. So if they're already under-resourced like they are in Ward 8, 99 losses is a lot. But the interesting thing about this, and this is where I've kind of like had to get a little bit wonky with it, the budget actually in some ways increases the budget for schooling that would infuse public schools with $181 million more dollars for the next year. But because of COVID funds that are now kind of running out, DCPS got $304 million in federal pandemic aid. That's like, you know, it's been so long since the pandemic that that money's running out now. And then teachers are getting paid more, which is obviously great, but makes costs higher. because of that, despite increases in the budget, they're still going to have to cut 200 positions.
Kat, as somebody who's been reporting on the intersection of DC and culture for a really long time, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think my thoughts are a little bit more general in the sense that it's really frustrating for me to witness the teachers bearing kind of the brunt of these cuts. I think that, I mean, this doesn't just apply to teaching, but it's just incredibly frustrating across the board when you see administrators who have kind of led these deficits and created the conditions for the needs for these kinds of budgetary chops are not being held accountable and instead having teachers bear the brunt of that.
Totally. It's not just like DCPS. Also, I think we may have spoken about it on an earlier episode, but the Childhood Educator Pay Equity Fund, which pretty much makes sure that pre-K and kindergarten teachers are making the same amount as high school and elementary and middle school teachers. That equity fund was completely cut out of the budget too. And it just kind of seems a little bit like short-sighted for me to cut schools, because like schools and kids are literally the future of our city. To cut money away from them seems like it'll only create problems for us down the line, budget-wise. But yeah, I mean, that's didn't stop the cuts in the budget, I guess. So
Ash, what is the future of all of this?
So there's actually an interesting update at the end of last week where the chairman of the council, Phil Mendelson, released a statement saying that in his budget, he is going to undo these cuts. The interesting thing is a lot of these cuts were due to a request from the CFO, the chief financial officer. He requested them to commit $217 million to the reserve fund, which is like a rainy day fund for DC, pretty much to like have backup for bills that may need to be paid down the line. Chairman Mendelson thinks this is unnecessary. He thinks we can devote surplus for the next, you know, 3-4 years to making sure we have enough money to pay those bills. So he's going to both put the pay equity fund for early childhood educators back and make sure that DCPS doesn't have to make cuts in his budget, which should be dropping May 28th. So it's definitely not final, these cuts, but we'll just have to see what happens next.
Everybody knows that getting that perfect Mother's Day gift is basically impossible, but we promise Mom will love this one. The Capitol Hill Restoration Society House and Garden Tour is back this Mother's Day weekend on May 11th and May 12th. Tour 9 elaborate homes and gardens and 3 historic buildings on Capitol Hill that you can't normally enter. And if you can't make it, check out the Capitol Hill Restoration Society's other events like walking tours and monthly preservation cafes. You can buy tickets for the Mother's Day House and Garden Tour on Eventbrite, and be sure to follow CHRS on Facebook and Instagram at Capitol Hill Restoration DC.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And Kat, you were talking about how it's kind of a shame that the staff is really feeling the squeeze of all this. And I feel like from one story where the staff is feeling the squeeze to another, what's happening with the Whiteout Union?
Yeah, so last week, the cooks, bakers, and baristas at Whiteout coffee shops on their 8th Street location and their 14th Street location launched their letter of intent to form a union after they said that concerns of mismanagement and mistreatment had basically and essentially gone unaddressed for a couple months now. And now they are working to get recognized by the National Labor Relations Board.
And what did they, so what are their reasons that they've given for unionizing here?
Employees of the Whiteout coffee shops have basically said that the mismanagement of the organizations has really driven their intent to unionize. They have experienced a wide range of just neglect from upper management, according to the interviews that I've conducted with them. The biggest issue that a lot of them are experiencing at the 8th Street shop is they had a general manager who was on the ground and really was mistreating employees, yelling at employees, and created an overall unfair and unsafe working conditions for the folks at H Street. Folks at both the 14th Street and H Street locations have spoken pretty extensively about management not addressing their structural concerns with the physical shops, and they're being slow to, I guess, upkeep and maintain the shops.
What kind of issues are they seeing in the shops? When you spoke to them, what kind of things were they complaining about?
Yeah, so I think the biggest issue that they're facing right now is the H Street location in particular is very understaffed and short-staffed. Holly Constanzo is a barista that I spoke to, and she basically talked to me about how she would work 8-hour shifts and be the only person on the floor while she was working. So she wasn't able to take any breaks, wasn't able to take any lunches. And the management in general has been saying, well, we're short-staffed throughout the week because on the weekends, we want to make sure that there are enough people in order to kind of cover the demand that they see on weekends. But really and realistically, there's just not enough employees on the floor to keep the shop running. And then there's also like some pretty egregious and really difficult conditions at each of the stores. The H Street location has like a piece of their countertop that is broken off, fallen off, and hasn't been repaired in over a month. And then at both locations, they have complaints about not having syrups and not having products like matcha, and management just not getting to those concerns in a timely manner.
Yeah, it seems like the lack of urgency is one of the big complaints. But I was reading your City Paper piece about this, and you know, a lot of these are things that, as somebody who thinks that everybody should have like respectful, safe working conditions, I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound good. But some of it also was like things that if I'm buying coffee there, that didn't sound good. Like one of the baristas was like, this, I don't know if this is a health code violation, but it doesn't seem great, right, when they were talking about some of the conditions they were talking about at the shop.
Yeah, I mean, at 14th Street, there is a pretty significant issue with flooding at the location where employees will work multiple shifts on end, and there will just be like a pool of water kind of accumulating in the restaurant, especially in like the area where employees are working. And so it's just really frustrating, but it's also like, I'm unsure if that's a health violation. That's what Christopher Chandler told me, who's one of the baristas at the 14th Street location. He said, I'm unsure if it's a health code violation, but it definitely doesn't feel safe. And also the fact that management is letting this water kind of accumulate for days at a time, hours at a time, without really getting to it, it makes the environment for baristas unsafe, but it also is just like not something that you or I going into a coffee shop would want to be, I don't know, exposed to.
Yeah, definitely don't want to get my coffee from a barista who's questioning the health code. But do you think there's like a wider trend here? Like, I've worked at restaurants, and like, it's definitely seems like a place that's like ripe for unionization sometimes. Like, everybody's busting their butt all the time. Like, there's an imbalance, even a bunch like employees and like who's getting paid what, and like, you know, different people are making different amounts and all this stuff. But there's been a kind of a trend of restaurants unionizing in DC. Do you see this like happening more, or you think like this is going to keep happening a lot amongst restaurants in DC, or is this more of a one-off?
I think within the context of Wydown, there's kind of two dual concerns that are running through the shops, right? A, it's like your general more common complaints of like the fact that there's short staffing, the fact that workers are not having like safe conditions the fact that workers aren't having like proper work-life balance, the fact that workers are being told that they can get access to company-sponsored health insurance if they work 30 hours a week and then only being staffed 28 or 29 hours on average in order to not basically meet that quota, which I think is something that is common to restaurant workers across the city. Those kinds of issues are not unique to Wydown. And then you have these pretty unique issues to Wydown where like they had a general manager who was yelling at them, verbally abusing them, making them feel unsafe, making them feel like the precarity of their day-to-day situation. There was an employee who was fired on the spot for an altercation that basically came out of him knocking too loud on one of the office doors in the coffee shop. There's also like the issue of health concerns and the management's kind of refusal to help out these employees in order to do their day-to-day tasks, which I think is unique to those specific locations.
So what's the future of all this? Are there any dates that we should be keeping in mind for next steps?
Yeah, so when it comes to dates, you should really be looking forward to the results of the unionization effort election. The Wydown management has chosen to not voluntarily recognize the Wydown union, and so they must go through the election process with the National Labor Relations Board in order to officially become a union. That's coming up within probably the next month or so. You should be on the lookout for that. And then with regards to just general calls to action, the folks at Wydown are really hoping that you can share their posts on social media, spread the word about their unionization efforts. And also, if you go in and you stop for coffee, leave a review stating your support for the unionization effort is what they're asking for.
Very clear ways to support. Thanks so much, Kat.
Yeah.
David, thanks for chatting with me. So like you and I both have cars in the DC metro area, and sometimes they're great, but sometimes they can be a hassle. And I heard you had car issues, man.
Yes, my car, like me, is old and falling apart. And so I wanted to get it fixed. But one of the truly unpleasant tasks I find in the world is getting your car fixed, because you have to take it usually somewhere extremely distant, extremely inconvenient, arrange some alternate form of transportation. And so I heard about Rota, Rota.com, and I went on the Rota.com website, and they will come and pick your car up, take it from you, and then do the work and bring it back to you. And so I made an appointment on Rota, which was easy as pie, beautiful user interface, for the work that I wanted done. The valet showed up at around 10 o'clock at my house, as exactly on time. Very easy, just handed him my keys. He drove off with my car. About an hour later, April called me. She said, here are some things that we found with your car in addition to what you want to do. She sent me videos that Michael...
Wait, that's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a car nerd, so I like want to know the nitty gritty of what's happening, because I don't know stuff.
1,000,000%. They sent me this video. There was a particular belt that had broken, and they sent me a video of it. And they sent me a list of sort of, here are the things that were recommended. Here are the things that seemed urgent to fix. And I could choose what I wanted to fix and sent that back to them, which took me like 3 minutes. Michael, the technician, fixed it. They then texted me and said, oh, your car's on the way back. My car was back in front of my house at 2:30. I'd given it to them at 10. It was back in front of my house that afternoon. Also, note, the valet did a much better job parking in front of my house than I do.
Don't they always?
So much closer to the curb. And it was an incredibly pleasant, super easy experience. And they were very trustworthy. They were clear about what they were going to fix. And it was incredibly convenient.
Yeah. So this like seems like a dream. I have used them before, but it's been a bit. Would you use them again for something like this?
I would use Rota again in a second. I would use Rota. And they have a discount for us too, for CityCast listeners. So if you go to Rota.com, they have the discount code CityCast20 and you get 20% off.
Sweet. Plots, David, thank you so much for talking with me. Again, CityCast listeners, you get 20% off any Rota service up to $100 using the code CityCast20. So go to Rota.com. That's Roda.com to book your appointment.
So Kat, Ash knows this about me, but you might not know this about me, which is that I love reality TV. I wouldn't even call it a guilty pleasure. It is a simple pleasure. Life is short. Life is hard. You got to find the things that you enjoy
no
and enjoy the heck
pleasures.
Out of them. Yes. So will you let me talk to you about reality TV for just a moment?
Absolutely. I am also a big reality TV head, so perfect spot to be in.
Amazing. Ash, what are your thoughts on reality TV?
I don't want to like steal valor here, but I also am something of a burgeoning reality TV head. I've dipped my toes in the past few years. I don't know if I have the same caliber of fandom as you guys, but I do watch a little Love Island UK here and there.
Okay. Yeah. Nothing. I can work with that. So as a reality TV fan, I have to tell you that the reality TV, specifically the Bravo message boards, subreddits, everybody is freaking out. And that is because the Real Housewives of DC, this kind of lost franchise, is finally available on streaming on Peacock. And so Bravo actually has pretty good like DMV representation. There's Real Housewives of Potomac, which just wrapped a couple of weeks ago, just had their reunion. Some people might not know this, but the reason why we have Real Housewives of Potomac is because of Real Housewives of DC. When DC ended, Potomac kind of rose from the ashes of that, of that franchise. And so it's kind of a big deal that DC is now available on streaming because Andy Cohen, Bravo's executive producer, previously had said it would never be available to watch. They were never coming back to DC. All of these big, emphatic proclamations about how you would never be able to watch DC. And so far, that had been true. If you wanted to go back and revisit 2011's Real Housewives of DC, the only available option to do so was to buy individual one-off episodes on Amazon. Trust me, I had looked.
And what is this, 2005? What is this?
I know, right? So the reason why DC was all but like pulled from the airwaves was because of like kind of a big deal incident. So during the filming of Real Housewives of DC, two of the cast members, housewife Mikhail Salahi and her husband Tarek Salahi, snuck into a 2009 White House state dinner despite not being invited. Do y'all remember this?
I do not remember this. I was fully a child.
Me too.
Like, I don't remember. Like, well, y'all, I'm a lot older than you, and I watched this in real time.
Wait,
jaw on the floor.
Well, this is insane. But why did they? They just wanted to sneak in to like have free dinner. Like, what? Why?
So
why were they sneaking into this?
Basically, they were, and I guess this kind of goes back to like what the DC franchise was all about. But they were really selling themselves as these DC wheelers and dealers, very well connected.
Sure.
And I don't want to give any spoilers, but it seems like a lot of that was smoke and mirrors. They might have been like low-key scammers. And so part of this grand facade that they were fancy people who knew other fancy people in DC was getting invites to these parties. And so this White House state dinner where the president and vice president are, they were not on the list. They just kind of like breezed by security.
What?
They showed up dressed appropriately as if they had been on the list. And then Secret Service had to kick them out. This all also happened on camera. So you watch when the show airs, you watch this happening on the show. I remember I watched this in real time in 2011 because I'm a lot older than y'all. It was like we had never seen anything like it. It was crazy.
It's crazy that not only they snuck in, but the cameras
right.
snuck in
yes.
too. What?
So, you know, if you watch Housewives, you're probably used to like all kinds of messy Housewives antics, like throwing champagne in people's faces and making big scenes. But this was a really big deal. It was parodied on Saturday Night Live. It became a security blunder that the White House security team had to publicly answer for. And Representative Peter King of New York requested the U.S. House Committee on Homeland Security open a formal investigation into the incident. There was even talk of filing criminal charges against the couple for doing this.
I kind of respect it more than think it's a criminal charge. It's like it's some classic DC like social climbing to like sneak into the White House dinner when you're not invited. I respect it more than anything. I don't know, they don't need to get charged for that.
I think it was just before their time. Like, had this happened in 2022, Mikhail would be an Instagram star. She would be on TikTok. We'd be following her get readies with me to go scam more people. I think that she just didn't do this in the right era.
Yeah, she was actually one of the first, honestly, because now I'm remembering seeing all these TikTok videos of people like sneak into the, you know, whatever with me, you know, sneak into the Beyonce concert or sneak into WWE with me. And I think maybe they were the first to do this, actually. So they could be trendsetters.
I agree with y'all. I mean, I think Mikhail Salahi walked so that Jen Shah could run in Salt Lake City.
Precisely.
So now that Real Housewives of DC is available to watch on streaming, everybody is sort of buzzing about it. And it is sort of sad because, you know, it was the only U.S. franchise of Real Housewives that was canceled after one season. And I went back and watched multiple episodes this weekend to prepare for this conversation. And it really was like a good show. Like, if you like reality TV, I recommend people watch it. I will say a couple of things that stood out to me. It aired in 2011. They filmed it in 2009. This is at the beginning of Obama's first administration. And during this time, I was a young person in DC. And it really was like a vibrant, exciting time to be in DC as a young Black person. And I think that the show was really trying to capture like that very specific energy. Because at the time, DC was still a majority Black city, I think that the show is really trying to demonstrate DC as this kind of place that is really racially and politically integrated, where people are getting together in these like racially and politically mixed groups to have like conversations about race and politics,
right.
Which led to on the show a lot of really clunky political and race commentary. Like, I think they're trying to be like, oh, people in DC, they just like sit down to drinks and they're talking about race and politics.
Right. Yeah, it's a funny place to be trying to have those conversations on The Real Housewives. Is not where I would necessarily go for my race commentary all the time.
Totally.
I'm kind of obsessed with it as a relic of that time period, though. As somebody who lived through it as like a 10-year-old, it's interesting to go back and see how different everything was. And because you don't have multiple seasons of it, it really does just feel like a time capsule of that era. So
that is a great way to put it. I feel exactly the same. And probably the bit that is the most, I think, rings the most true to the DC experience is all the women are at dinner, and one of the women who has been living in Georgetown reveals that she's planning on buying a house in the suburbs of Northern Virginia. And all of the castmates react to her as if she's just told them she's joining the circus. Like, one woman is like, with Obama in the White House, now is not the time to leave the district.
Wow. Yeah, no, I have to say, I'm definitely going to have to watch this, not only because it sounds like spicy and entertaining, but also because it's like the fact that it was like hidden away and like is now just redropped, like something that like Indiana Jones had to go like find from some tomb somewhere. Makes it all the more exciting. So I have Peacock. I'm definitely going to be tapping into this.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there is a bit of a Streisand effect where it's like, I probably would not have watched this. I wouldn't have cared about it. But Andy Cohen, you telling me that I can't watch it, now I'm going to watch it as soon as it's available.
Exactly.
Ash, Kat, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Bridget.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for today here on CityCast DC. If you enjoyed the show, why not tell your friend who loves reality TV? They can rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with even more news from around the city. Talk to you then.